Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded July 26, 2023. While the escalation of the Ukraine war is quickly morphing, becoming more international in character, over the weekend, Russia's President Putin warned Poland against sending troops into Western Ukraine, informing the UN Security Council he was, quote, aware of plans to establish some sort of so-called Polish-Lithuanian-Ukrainian unit. Poland reacted by denouncing Putin's speech as a threat and summoning the Russian ambassador in protest. As both Poland and Lithuania are NATO member countries, the greatest fear must be of this heightening belligerence leading to military engagement that could trigger NATO's Article 5 mutual defense clause. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. Principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears, Helmer has too been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism, and served as advisor to governments at the highest levels. Among his many book titles are Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Jackal's Wedding, American Power, Arab Revolt, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, and his latest, Australian Fascism, How It Destroyed the Courts. John's latest article at Dances with Bears, The Polish Response to Putin's Challenge, reveals Washington's manipulation of both Polish political jingoism and the country's upcoming autumn elections. Today, John Helmer, getting to the heart of America's Ukraine war aims. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well,
Thank you.
It's always my delight. You know that. Well, John, there's a lot of balls up in the air in Ukraine right now, and some of the biggest, it seems, belong to the Poles, as revealed by its government chafing at the suggestion Russia is determining Poland's borders by warning them off of Western Ukraine. John, what's behind Poland's implicit territorial claim here?
Well, you're right, Chris. The balls are hanging up in the air. They're not hanging down in this case, because military capacity and political will in Poland, facing an election in late October or November, absolutely preclude the possibility that the Poles would send regular forces anywhere. They are facing an election in which many Poles believe the U.S. is trying to back the overthrow of the present present law and justice party, the government, and replace them with a more U.S.-friendly government, though you can't do much more than the present government to buy weapons from the United States. What really is happening in the unusual situation where President Putin recited some Russian, Polish, Ukrainian history for the last 100 years last week is a couple of warnings aimed at Warsaw, the United States, and at Kiev. What's happening is that the end of the Ukrainian capacity to fight the NATO war against Russia is becoming very visible. It's visible, though not admitted, in some of the remarks by U.S. Defense Secretary General Austin and the chief of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the outgoing General Milley. They're hiding the fact that the U.S. will not provide F-16s to the Ukrainians, will provide cluster munitions, all sorts of other stuff, but essentially the U.S. military side understands the war's lost. That's not acceptable to the State Department across town. And the White House is in the middle trying to fight a re-election campaign for Biden without wishing to have something as disastrous as the retreat from Kabul or the retreat from Saigon on its hands when it goes to election. In Europe, it's clear that the military staffs of the French, the serious powers, so the France, Germany, and Britain, understand the war cannot be won by the Ukrainian side, and that the more they throw their weapons into the fight, the more the Russians will demonstrate that their weapons are useless. And they can't sell them in the world if, as the Russians proved, they can destroy the Patriot missile system, HIMARS artillery, a rocket system, the tanks, the armored vehicles, and so forth. So the military staffs and the military industrial complexes of Europe want a way out without appearing to be defeated. How to do that? Well, it rather depends on what the regime in Kiev is willing to do, fighting to the last man. And what Putin has done, President Vladimir Putin, speaking to the Security Council last week in an unusually open and lengthy speech, has said basically, if the Poles attempt to enter Western Ukraine, that's Galicia, that's where Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, Chrystia Freeland, comes from. That's where the fascist ideologies come from. That's where the Banderites come from. That's where the ideology of kill Russia comes from. If the Poles enter Galicia, they will never leave. They will occupy the territory as they once did almost 100 years ago. And in that case, Putin is warning, the Russian position, the Russian army will defend Western Ukraine against Poland. That has two parts to the warning. First, don't even think about reaching an agreement with Zelensky. That's President Vladimir Zelensky, president of Ukraine, for some sort of cooperative peacekeeping force in Western Ukraine as a kind of hair trigger to stop the Russians moving west. Don't even think about that, Putin is telling the world. Second, don't think of attacking Belarus, because we are in Belarus, we will attack you and defend Belarus. Third, he's saying, if the Ukrainian army will dispose of Mr. Zelensky, if that's what the Ukrainians decide to do, it will be a lot easier for us to reach an accommodation with Kiev on the survival of that Western territory in the Ukraine. That's between Kiev and Lvov and the Polish border. So there are three balls, if to use your expression, Chris, up in the air, and that's how, let's call them balloons, and that's how President Putin shot them down last Friday.
Well, let's look at the first one. I mean, when you characterize the Western military establishment, I mean, Pentagon, admitting at least to itself, if not openly, that this war is a lost cause, that doesn't really jive. I mean, I'm looking at a tweet by the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd J. Austin III, and he says, this is from a few hours, he says, quote, yesterday we announced additional security assistance to meet Ukraine's critical security and defense needs. We are prepared to stand with Ukraine for as long as it takes. This is something we've heard from the Canadian administration ad nauseum, from mainly Chrystia Freeland and her camp, as you pointed out. So is this window dressing, or it sounds to me like the Secretary of Defense thinks that things are going peachy, and the announcement he refers to is for hundreds of millions of dollars worth of artillery rounds and mortar rounds and striker carriers and you name it, right? It's there's a list 15 deep, and I'm sure there's more to boot that we're not hearing about. So what is this is this a disconnect or what?
Well, we're stretching for metaphors, aren't we?
I'm sticking with balls, okay?
No, I don't mind the window dressing. It's just a smashed window, and you can put a curtain across a smashed window. Look, in politics, a decent politician can say two or three different and contradictory things out of the same mouth. What we did attempted to do in the piece before the piece you mentioned, Chris, is to show what General Austin, who's not quite the sharpest knife in the box, had to say when asked 10 days ago at one of his press conferences. How did he explain that the UK, the British Defence Secretary, Ben Wallace, seemed to be attacking the Zelensky regime and saying we are not Amazon? It's a well-known expression. It's quite a nice way of saying to the Ukrainian side, look, we the British, we the Europeans, we the alliance, NATO, have delivered everything you wanted and you're failing. And what we do know is that that message was conveyed quietly to Zelensky at the NATO summit meeting in Vilnius. So when Ben Wallace went public with the first NATO defense minister of that rank saying, we're fed up with Zelensky, he said it politely, their counteroffensive has failed. We deliver everything and they keep answering, asking for more, demanding more and more and more F-16s, and which are nuclear capable, for example. Then the reporter asked General Austin, what do you make of that? And you look at his answer, he waffles. He said, I've always cooperated with Wallace. He's been a great partner. And all I ever heard in Vilnius was that we're sticking to the Ukrainians for all it takes. That's what he said. General Milley had a bit more to follow, in which he clearly said the only reason that Ukrainian counteroffensive or offensive is failing is that there are these damnable minefields. So we're going to provide more anti-mine equipment. We're not going to provide F-16s, Milley said. We are not going to provide F-16s. Jacob Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, repeated the line a little later. The excuse is F-16s can't change the situation on the ground. So what they've done is throw a lot of extra promises. That's the Americans are throwing a lot of extra promises to substantiate the idea that they're supplying everything that the Ukrainians will need. But that's got a timeline on it. So they're throwing cluster munitions to because they can't deliver enough conventional munitions. They're sending more types of missile. They're sending more kinds of ground warfare systems, all to show they're doing everything that it takes. But the silent part of the message is Zelensky's got to prove he can make any difference between now and Christmas, because if he can't, it's all over. Then starting next year, the U.S., the NATO military establishments will find a way out of the war.
Well, you're referencing your article, the NATO generals know the war against Russia is lost. The Pentagon fires smoke to screen the retreat. And in that article, you quote the generals or the Secretary of Defense Austin saying, quote, Ben Wallace and I have worked along with coalition partners over the last year or so on this particular issue. This is the cohesion of NATO. And Ben has done a lot to enable and to help the Ukrainian military. And so he's been a great partner. But again, I continue to see unity and cohesion. I continue to hear ministers say that we are going to support Ukraine for as long as it takes. I mean, this is the same mantra that I just wonder, John, who is this aimed at? Who in the United States really cares about Ukraine? Who in the United States that knows anything wants this war to continue forever the way it is and costs so much to the American treasury at a time running up to an election when Americans are hurting economically at home and bank rates are going up? It's going to hurt even more. Who are they talking to? Who are they trying to convince that they're going to continue on and on no matter what?
Well, I think you know the answer to that, Chris.
I don't.
Oh, yes, you do. It's the same reason that Mr. Trudeau's just appointed Mr. Blair as the new defense minister of Canada. It's the reason he kept Ms. Freeland, our deputy prime minister of Canada. The same reasoning is applied in the United States. You can't win elections when you preside over a massive defeat of everything you've stood for and thrown into war for the last decade or more. In the U.S., the election is and the Biden campaign for re-election dominate what any cabinet official or U.S. administration official has to say between now and November of next year, right? That you're fighting a re-election. If you don't want President Biden to be re-elected, you better resign your job and allow somebody to be reappointed. So Austin is talking domestic politics. Who are they convincing? The Congress. Who do they need to convince? The Democrats and the Democratic Party machine and the Democratic media, and the Democratic supported media include all the biggies, you know, the ones that a lot of bloggers love to hate, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, and so on. Who has to be persuaded? Well, that's the constituency for the re-election of President Biden. And just bear in mind that if you look at the re-election campaign calculation, even a thickie like General Austin could comprehend, the negative rating for Biden's performance on running the war in the Ukraine is smaller than the negative rating U.S. voters have towards Biden on everything else. So American voters simply aren't connecting the Ukraine war to the performance of the president or his Republican opposition, whether that's Trump or somebody else.
Well, okay? The American people aren't famous for caring about long distant wars. I mean, look at what they put up with Afghanistan for 20 years. But still, it's bleeding money. Where this money is going, we can get to. But I mean, it is bleeding money out of the treasury, and Americans are seeing like concrete cuts to welfare programs and food stamps and things like this that are really hurting at the base level. And then at the same time, they're hearing stuff like what Austin is saying, with millions and billions more automatically being sent off to Ukraine. There is a resentment, whether the Times and the Washington Post understand that or not, amongst the hoi polloi, the voters. There's a lot of resentment, I think, and it's growing from what I read on my particular feeds online. There's a lot of anger there, and I think they maybe don't realize it, but I don't know. It seems like they're somehow missing the plot here.
Well, somebody's missing the plot. And take, for example, if you're right, and I don't disagree that American voters are normal people. They know how to count what isn't in their pocket. They know how to count cost. They're commonsensical. And they will tolerate a war if it doesn't produce relatives coming home in body bags, if it doesn't produce blood. What American voters will never do is re-elect an incumbent president if there's a combination of inflation and body bags, blood, war casualties. So ever since Vietnam combined inflation with blood and killed LBJ's, Lyndon Baines Johnson's re-election campaign for that time, and ultimately lost the Democrats the White House to Richard Nixon. Since that time, the U.S. administrations have devised ways of having wars without declarations by Congress, maintaining the budget for warfare with minimal casualties, which is what Afghanistan was and Libya was and Syria was and Iraq was, et cetera, et cetera. Right now, if there was the anger that was politically an asset, you'd see somebody like Robert Kennedy Jr. running as a Democrat against Biden saying it. Instead, you don't see Robert Kennedy Jr., as difficult as it is for him to talk in a microphone without sounding distorted, and difficult as it is for him not to produce ideas that are lunatic or wrong. What is he saying? I can tell you what he's saying. He's saying next to nothing about the Ukraine war.
Well, to be fair, he did. As you say, expert politicians can say the opposite things out of the same mouth. Well, he did. He talked about his own son working or going and fighting in Ukraine as a mercenary and coming back and relating to him the true face of what's going on there, and he was opposed to the war and wants it to stop for America's sake. So he has come out and said that. But yeah, and his popularity, by the way, is higher than, according to his sources, is higher than anybody else right now. Should the poll be held today? So I mean, he's doing that just to insert that, John. Sorry to step in.
No, you're not wrong there. He's also groveled to Israel. He's running an absolutely standard Kennedy-type, Democrat machine-type campaign in which he says all sorts of things that are contradictory, all sorts of he favors Israel's war against the Palestinians at the same time as he is in favor of God knows what solution for Syria. He's completely all over the place. Why? Because he knows it doesn't generate votes and it turns off money for his campaign. For him to be serious, and he's a serious, he's got five fingers and a thumb on his hand.
Four and a thumb, I think.
Sorry, yes. my window suddenly opened. I got my balls in the wrong direction, didn't I? Yes, he's got four fingers and a thumb and he can count. And he knows very well that the winner of a Democratic nomination process has got to appeal to what American voters are concerned about most, and the Ukraine war is not one of them. Oddly enough, the biggest and most obvious issue in U.S. politics is the mental incapacity of the sitting president. So why hasn't Mr. Kennedy raised mental incapacity, unfitness under the U.S. Constitution as a challenge to the sitting president? I don't know why he hasn't. I don't know why the Republicans don't raise it. Maybe somebody else who's listening will tell us why the mental incapacity as a violation of the U.S. Constitution isn't the dominating issue in U.S. politics right
now.
Well,
it's poor manners, I think, John. I think that would explain it. The presidency, I should say, has taken on almost a regal air in the United States, so that it would be like mentioning the Queen showing her underwear or farting at a state function or something. I mean, everybody knows it, but they're not going to say anything about it, right? I mean, remember Reagan.
No, I think it's different. I think the real reason is that if you're running as a Democrat, you can't raise the constitutional issue, because it would trigger the removal of Biden, and guess who'd become the acting president? Kamala Harris, right?
But the Republicans aren't raising it either, though, as far as I'm aware.
So far as I'm aware, the only things that the Republicans do is to raise raise Biden's incapacity as a joke. And compare it to whoever they think is doesn't have his balls hanging up in the air as a potential candidate. I assume the Republicans have worked out that it's better for them to run against an incapacitated Biden than a more capacitated Democrat. They're making the same calculation. Yeah. Remove a man who's incapacitated by Parkinson's disease and Lewy body dementia. Remove him, and you've got somebody more difficult to defeat. So both sides are the same coin. We're wandering away from the Ukraine war.
Yeah, okay.
It's fine with me.
The answer is you can't leave it there. Everybody's hanging now.
The answer is... whether the window dressing is the metaphor, whether balls up in the air is the metaphor, we are dealing with the fact that the Ukraine war, no matter how costly it is for the U.S. taxpayer, no matter how costly it is indirectly, the war, sanctions war against Russia is to the cost of energy, for example, in the world, the cost of wheat in the rest of the world, no matter how costly it is, indirectly or directly, the politics of the United States and of Canada dictate that the war can be continuously fought and governments re-elected so long as they aren't defeated in such an obvious way that they are obliged to run away, as they did from Kabul, as they did from Saigon. That would be a political disaster which an incumbent prime minister like Trudeau or an incumbent president incapacitated like Biden couldn't survive. That outcome for the short term, and the short term's 1 year away for the US, the short term dictates you say we're going to fight to the last, but after Christmas, when Zelensky will have exhausted NATO's private ultimatum, the military have got to find a way out. So that's when General Winter, the great commanding general of Russian forces, when the ground freezes, will start his counteroffensive, his offensive. And how far will he go? Which brings us back to where we started. Okay. The Russian position is we will not go into Galicia if Zelensky goes.
Wow.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking to John Helmer. John's a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. Helmer, he has too been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism, serving as advisor to governments at the highest level. And among his many book titles are Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Jackal's Wedding, American Power, Arab Revolt, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, and his latest is Australian Fascism, How It Destroyed the Courts. Yeah, just on the last point about the body bags, John, I mean, there are Americans dying because of the neglect of the social safety net, because of the money that's being diverted, people would argue. So, and that is a more nuanced death toll, to be sure, but I think that Americans are becoming more and more cognizant of that, mostly, I would venture, because the communications are doing an end run around the monopoly of information that the major news networks and the big papers have enjoyed for so very long. But John, now the second point of this was the idea that Putin, President Putin of Russia, would go along with a new Kyiv government after the departure of Zelensky, a regime change in effect. Who's he talking to?
The military, the Ukrainian military. The general staff of the Ukraine, and I'm not an expert on Ukrainian military officers, those who've survived the decapitation attacks and those who are still in command or replaced in command. If I'm not mistaken, and please, the audience should correct me if I'm wrong, the Ukrainian general staff are principally from the east of the country. They speak Russian. Their early careers were training in Soviet military academies and schools and in units. They understand or think they understand Russian military doctrine. Yes, they're enemies now, but in the long term, they want to be the commanders of a military of a surviving country. On the other hand, Mr. Zelensky's support is principally from the west of the country, the Azovists, the Banderites, the fascists, the neo-Nazis, are people with grandfathers like Chrystia Freelance, who worked for the German occupation of Galicia in the liquidation of Jews, Poles, and Russians. Those people who dominate the Ukrainian diaspora in Canada and therefore dominate Ms. Freeland, and therefore dominate Mr. Trudeau, and will dominate Mr. Blair's administration of the defense appropriations and strategy of Canada, those people are also have to have a territory, and their capital's Lvov. And basically Putin is saying, get rid of Zelensky, you'll get to keep Western Ukraine. Get rid of Zelensky to the military stuff, you'll have a